We're holding on some Aleph on the Bay's last words. We learned about all the different non-kosher kinds of birds, and we were talking about altogether you have four simanim, where if a bird has none of them, then it's definitely non-kosher. We said the nesher is like that. We talked about are there in fact other species other than the nesher, of which that's true. Rashi had said that not necessarily, just there might be subspecies of the nesher. Tosfos had said there may well be others. We talk about what a nesher is anyway, whether it's an eagle or a vulture or whatever. Then we said there are some non-kosher birds that have one or two or even three simanim, but they're still not kosher. And then you have, if it has all four, then it's definitely kosher. But we said that actually you don't even need, we learned a braisa from a chiyah that says that if you know that it's not one of these, then even if it only has one of those simanim, then it's kosher. There is, by the way, that's all how Rashi and Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim learn. There is actually the Baal Amar brings a couple of other understandings of the sugya. One of them, which a number of Rishonim also agree with, because they have a bunch of questions on Rashi's and Tosfos' shita, in keeping with the flow of the sugya. So a number of them learn the other way around. So here we were saying that of the birds, we said 20 of them have three simanim, and we were talking about that it meant that three of them have 20 simanim of kashrus, twenty of them have three of the simanim of kashrus, three out of the four. But then there are Rishonim who learn the other way around. That means that 20 of them only have one simanim. We also mentioned in this connection, we mentioned that the Peres and the Oznia have only one simanim. Again, according to Rashi, it would mean that Peres and Oznia have only one of the four simanei Tara, and therefore you can't eat a bird that has only one simen unless you know it's not them. According to a different way of looking at it, it means that means that the Peres and the Oznia have one simen Truma, not simen Tara. Okay. So Gemara says, continuing on this topic, Amar Nachman, Hoya Boki Bahena Rishmasehim. If a person is familiar with them and with their names. Now, here you have the question, what we mean by them. So according to Rashi, it means if he's familiar with the Peres and the Oznia. So given that according to Rashi, those are the only two that have one Simen Tara, then it means that if he's familiar with them, and he knows what birds are the Peres and the Oznia, and he's familiar with their names, and Tosfos points out, you need both, so you don't get confused, then, then for such a person, a bird that has only one simen would be tahor. Because if we said before that the Peres and the Oznia are the only ones that have one simen, and that have only one simen tahara, then it would follow that if you know that this bird that's in front of you is not a Peres and Oznia, then you're good. So then that would fit with what we learned before, that Abchia had said that you can eat a bird with one simen. Whereas a number of the Rishonim point out that then why is he using the expression Bahena Rishmasehen, which where it should say Hoyaboki Peres of Oznia Rishmasehen. So therefore, a number of the Rishonim explain rather like one of those other opinions, an opinion brought in the Baal Amor in the name of Reb Moshe but of Yosef. That's the other way around. It's the other way around. Most of the non-kosher birds have one simen Truma. And the Peres and Oznia have three, so then it would mean if he's Baki Bahena Rishmasehen, if he's familiar with all those 20 birds and their names, and he knows that this bird in front of him is not one of them. One point that those Rishonim make, by the way, is that granted we don't know the identities of a lot of the 24 birds mentioned in the Torah, but a few of them we can be pretty certain of the identities, and if we check them, Rishonim point out, we don't find, according to Rashi, it would come out that they all have three Simanei Tara, most of them have three Simanei Tara, but we can check a bunch of them and find that they don't. So therefore, that's one reason for them to follow the opinion of this Reb Moshe but of Yosef, who says that on the contrary, most of them have only one simen. This is an example we were talking about the other day, doing experiments in order to verify the halacha. So Rishonim are pointing out that if you look in practice at some of the birds that are identifiable on the list, then you don't see that they don't seem to have as many simoni tara as the Gemara implies, and therefore we would have to understand differently. Continues Reb Nachman. So again, so if you recognize them, Peres and Oznia, according to Rashi, the other birds, according to some other Rishonim, then if you have a bird that has one simen and you know it's not them, then it's tahor. Lo yehayu baki behenem shmesehen. What if he's not so familiar with the with the Pedersinos, Nita, or with the other kinds of birds, or with their names. He doesn't know which ones are called what. Then the Simon Echad, then if he has a bird that has one Simon Tomei, then he has to consider it Tomei, Misafik, because it might be a Peres or Rosnia. The Shmei Simonim Tahor, but if he has two Simonim, then already it's Tahor for Ushiyaku Odev, as long as he can recognize that it's not the raven. Because the raven, as we discussed in the Gemara before, is the only kind of bird that has two Simone Tumah and two Simone Tara. So therefore, as long as he'd need to be able to identify what the four Simone Tara are. And as we learned before, we have a Macholikus who's showing him how to identify some of them, but assuming in the time of the Gemara where this kind of thing was clear, that a person could eat a bird that has two Simone Tara as long as he knows it's not a raven. But if one asks Oda the Tuloi, you're telling me all he has to know is that it's not a raven, and that's it? But Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk doesn't just say Oda, it says Aceful Oda Laminoi. It says all the raven lamino according to its kind. So Odev's the Odev. So when it says Odev, that means the bird that we call Odev, again, this is one of those things where Tosfos points out if it means what we're familiar with as an Orev, which is a raven, then on the face of it, Tosfos points out that it has Tosfos says, I don't know, it seems to have an etzvi seira, it has a zefek. There was actually an interesting point that Rishonim discussed whether the Orev has a zefek or not. Whether we said one of the simonim is that it has a zefek, it has that pouch in its throat, and Tosfos over here says that it has a zefek, but there are Rishonim who say it doesn't have a zefek. So what is it? A machlokas b'metzius checked. It's actually so Tosfos brings that the Rivon checked a raven. And found that it had a zefek, but then Tosfos discusses that maybe it doesn't have a zefek. So what is it? A machlokas b'metzius? Open up a raven and check. So there are a few possibilities that they bring up how there could be such a machlokas. It could be, for example, that the esophagus in an oirev widens at a certain point in the middle of it. So is that wide enough to be considered a zefek, or is that just a wide spot on it? It also has kind of a pouch in its mouth. So does that count as a zefek or not? So therefore, it's not a machlokas for Matthias, but it's a machlokas of how to understand what is defined as a zefek and what is not. In any case, Tosfos discusses then that, again, the Odev may not be what we're familiar with as a raven, because it doesn't necessarily have two Simone, a raven doesn't necessarily have two Simone Tara, as the Gemara is saying over here. But again, there's different possibilities, because there are subspecies of ravens, and again, depending on how you define some of these Simonim, then it may be that it meets the criteria or not. In any case, so the Braisa says, when it says Odev, means what we're familiar with as Odev. But when it says Lamino, when it says according to its kind, that means that there are other related kinds of birds. So what does that include? Rabbi Eliezer and Lahavi says Zarzil. Rabbi Eliezer says that comes to include these Zarzil. They both have two Simone Tara, and the Gemara points out in a number of places that the Zarzil tends to live together with Urd. So therefore, so Rabbi Eliezer actually considers it to be a subspecies of the raven. In English, this bird is called a starling. So Rashi translates it external, and with changes in the French language over hundreds of years, the bird is nowadays called in French éternel, or however it's pronounced. I don't know, you know French better than I do, but whatever. It's in English it's called a starling. So Rabbi Eliezer says that's included in Laminoi of the raven. Omru loy le Rabbi Eliezer. So the Chum said to Rabbi Eliezer, what do you mean that that's a non-kosher bird? V'alei anshe Kfar Tumauta should be Yehuda, or your Oifanoisam. The people of Kfar Tumauta in the territory of Yehuda would eat such birds, Mepneshi Yeshlehen Zephyr, because they have a Zephyr. Rabbi Eliezer says, you know what, they're wrong in that. Afhena, sitting litinus again. You know what, one day they're going to have to give an accounting of themselves in front of the Eishter because they're eating a non-kosher bird. Now again, here's where you have you can discuss again. You know, is there can be something in the bird's neck which maybe counts as a zefek, maybe not. So then you could say that these people of Kfar Tumauta are understanding the structure in the neck to be a zefek, but Rabbi Eliezer says that's wrong. And the fact that the zarzir, the Gemara elsewhere, has an expression, you know why the zarzir is always together with the Urif? Because it's its min. Because in English, you have the expression birds of a feather flock together, and the Gemara in Bava Kamma brings a number of places in Tanakh and in popular sayings and whatever that bear out this point that life tends to stick with life. One of them being, by the way, in the last week was Parshas Chukas Balak. You have that sort of Parshas Chukas, which we didn't actually name in Shul because it was a double parasha, but whatever. Anyway, it mentions over there about Yiftach, that they're gathered together with him, empty people, Anoshim Reikim. So the Gemara says that's an example of Min Holachal Eitzel Minoi, that the like tends to stick with like. Yiftach was not exactly such a great guy either, so therefore he tended to attract these kinds of empty-headed hangers-on. Okay. In any case, Rabbi Eliezer says that the Zarzir is actually a subspecies of Oriv, and the fact that people in Kfar Tamarta eat it because they think it has this effect, Rabbi Eliezer says that's wrong. Dovrach, another explanation, the Gemara says, Leminehu lohobi snunis lavona. Another explanation of Leminehu, Leminoi actually, that it says by the raven, comes to include the white snunis. A snun, again, it actually gives a French translation, arundila, which in modern French, hirundel, or whatever, means a swallow. So it comes to include the white swallow. Even though it's white and ravens are black, nevertheless, it's still considered part of the same min divir. Rabbi Eliezer, again, Rabbi Eliezer, that's another explanation of what Rabbi Eliezer says is included in the minoy of the raven. Omru lois, Racham said, v'alei anshuk gol ha'oyen osun lois. So don't the people of the upper Galil, like the area of Tzfas and Miron and whatever, they eat it, but they should cook one in it, because its gizzard can be peeled. And as we learned before, that's one of the Simone Tara as well. Omalahem, and again, Rabbi Yezza says to them, Apena, sit and listen and say again, one day they're going to have to give an accounting of themselves because it's not, in fact, a kosher bird. So here's where, again, Tosfos has the long discussion about what exactly, how exactly do we define the Oriv, and how exactly can we define the Zefek and the Kruk of Anitlach. Tosfos also points out, by the way, the Chachamim definitely agree there are other species, including the Mimino, no question about that. They just say that it doesn't include the Zarzir or the Snunis. They would say it includes other subspecies. Anyway, the point is that we see in the Braise then that there are definitely other subspecies of Oriv, even according to the Chachamim. They find not the Zarzir, not the Snunis Lavana, but nevertheless there are definitely others. So how can Rabbi Nachman before say that if you find a bird with two simonim, as long as you know it's not an Oriv, then it's definitely kosher? What if it's one of these other subspecies? So fine, Ela Oriv V'chol Min Oriv. Fine, Rabbi Nachman means, as long as you know that it's not an Oriv, and it's not any of the subspecies of Oriv. So we know that all of them, so the Ran explains, we know that all of them have two Simone Tara, but they're not necessarily the same one in different birds. And again, here's where you have Tosfos' discussion of whether, in fact, it has Etzvi Yisera and a Zefek and so forth. Anything that would be under the subspecies of Oriv is going to have two Simone Chuma and two Simone Tara. So Rav Nachman means as long as you know that this one is not any one of those, then you're good. So the Gemara says, Omar Amem, Hilchasa, the bottom line, halacha, Oifa Baba Simen Echad, if you have a bird with one simen and you don't know what it is, Tahar, then it's Tahar. Now the implication is he's not saying, even if you're not so familiar with the names, because we're not concerned that it's Peres and Osnia for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain soon. But who do Doris, provided though that this bird is not Doris. We learned a couple of days ago a few possibilities that we're showing in Bring of what Doris is, that it tears off prey, or that it tears off pieces of its prey with its talons and eats them a little at a time, or that it kills its prey while it's alive, and so forth. So as long as you know that the bird is not Doris, then Amema says it's fine to eat it even with one sip. As we learned yesterday, the Rambam writes, and then Tosfos on Amud Beis says something similar, that really actually what you do need to do is also, you do need to know that its gizzard is peelable. The Baal HaMor, by the way, mentions an interesting thing in this regard. He says, if you have a bird that has a wide beak like a duck and webbed feet also like a duck, then you can be sure it's not Doris. A Doris, a predatory bird, is going to have talons, is going to have a short beak, so if it has a wide beak and webbed feet, then he says it's definitely not Doris. So the post can bring this, although the Amor says maybe you still shouldn't rely on this, as we'll talk about further on Omen Days, as we touched on before. We really can't eat any birds nowadays unless we have a solid Nesora about them. There's an interesting thing that's brought up as far as turkey, how a Minnesota developed on that when turkeys are native to America. There's quite a lot of ink has been spilled on that. And in fact, there are achronim who don't like the idea of eating turkey. Famously, it's known that the Shalar Kaddish said that his descendants shouldn't eat turkey and Adayim Azem. Many of them are still careful with that. But in general, the consensus of the postkin has been to be mapped to it for a variety of reasons, among them that it's very similar to and maybe even interbreeds with birds that are known to be kosher, and the Gemara tells us elsewhere that kosher and non-kosher species can't interbreed. Anyway, so Omalei Rav Ashi Lamema, so Rav Ashi says to Lamema, you're telling me that if you have a bird that has only one simen tara, and you don't care about whether the person is familiar with the Peres and Osnia, hold it Rav Nachman, my, what about Rav Nachman's point about needing to be familiar with the Peres and Osnia? Omalei Lamema says, Lois Shmili, I haven't heard of that, meaning Koloima, what he really means is Lois Svirili. I don't hold of that. My Ikamish from Peres and Osnia, what is the concern that this bird with one simen might be Peres and Osnia? Less new, but Yishu, such birds are not found in settled areas. They're found only in the deserts or faraway islands or whatever. So if you find a bird in a civilized area, then you know that it's not it's not a Peres or Osnia. So Rashi had said that if it means that if you find only one simon, as long as you haven't seen it be dodus, then you're good. But Tosfos says, wait a minute, it could be an odor, which has two simone tara. Tosfos says it means that one simon is namely that it's not dodus. Now, the only thing to be concerned of is peres and osnia, but if it was dodus, then automatically it would be non-kosher. Again, according to the other opinions of Rishonim, who learn the earlier part differently, that most birds have one simon, most non-kosher birds have one simon tara, and the peres and osnia, on the contrary, that most kosher birds have three simon tara, have one simon tara, and on the contrary, the peres and osnia have three, then they would have to learn the Gemara differently according to this as well. That you don't have to be concerned that this bird with three simone tara would be a peres and osnia because they're far away from civilization. Okay. So now let's start talking about different other kinds of birds. For one thing, we mentioned before the snunis, the swallow. So let's talk about a different din that relates to that. Omer of Yehuda, oikam esaret kosher lataras metzora. A bird that scratches is kosher for making a metzora tara. We know the Torah tells us at the beginning of Parshas Metzora that the procedure of making a metzora tara begins with two birds and then mayim chayim, spring water, and a number of other things. Eitz erez, ezev, shni telas. And then you shech one of the birds, etc., and you have the whole procedure mentioned over there. The Torah only says that you should take two live kosher birds. It doesn't say what species. So Rabbi Yehuda tells us that a type of bird that scratches is kosher for this purpose. The Zui Snunus Lavana, Shenefuk, Rabbi Yezer Chachamim, this would be the Snunus Lavana, the white swallow that Rabbi Yezer and the Chachamim argued about before. Now, according to Rabbi Yezer, you couldn't use it because it has to be a kosher bird. But according to the Chachamim, who are saying that it is a kosher bird, and as we said, people in the upper Galil even would eat it as a kosher bird. So according to them, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that such a bird is also kosher to use for taras and mitzvah. Why we call it that? Scratches, a couple of different ideas that Mephoshim say. It can mean that when it eats its food, it doesn't pull off pieces like we said before, but it sort of scratches it and then scratches off pieces and eats it or whatever. It can be that it's a bird that's not easily tameable or domesticable, and therefore when you try to catch it, it's going to scratch you. It's going to try to scratch you with its claws. A couple of other possibilities. So Omar Amemar, Samemar says the chibra kresa, if its belly is white, then actually there's no machlokas. Even Rabbi Yezer would hold that such a bird is mutter. The machlokas is when its belly is yeroika. Now, yeroika, as we learned earlier, in our parak, can mean any of a few different colors. It can mean yellow. It can mean green. It can even sometimes mean a bluish color. So whatever it is, one subtype of swallow has a stomach of that color. So that would be the machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer also Rabbanan Shoru. Rabbi Eliezer says it's also the chamhol. It's multiple the hilchos of Rabbi Eliezer and says I'm named with the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer that it is in fact also, which would mean, in other words, of course, that then it would mean that kind of bird cannot, in fact, be used for taras and mitzvah because then it would be a non-kosher bird if it has this yellow or green belly. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Mazutra masni hafen. Mazutra learns a name a statement differently. The Yeruka Kresa, when it has a green belly, Kulamale Pligi to Osir, then there's no machloek, because it's definitely Osir. Pipligi the chivra kresa. The machlokas is when the swallow is white and also has a white belly. Rabbi Eliezer also Rabbanan Sharu. That's according to Marzutra's version of it. Rabbi Eliezer says that that's also the Chum say it's Mutter. The Huchsek Rabbanan the Sharu, and then the Halacha will be like the Chachamim who say that it's Mutter. So in other words, according to both versions, it comes out, that the ones with the green or yellow belly are usur, and the ones with the white belly are mutter. It's just a difference of how it was phrased. So the Gemara says, "Bishlengan amand over b'chivra kreisa pligi." According to Marzutra's version, that the machloikas is when it has a white belly, then we can understand. According to him, I can tell you zui snunas levana. Then we can understand why earlier the Braisa mentioned that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the laminoi by a raven includes snunas levana because it's levana, it's white it, all over. Its body is white and its belly is white. But if you say, according to Amema's original version, that the machlokas is only when it has a yellow or green belly, then why is the Braisa mentioning the white one when in fact the machlokas is actually about the one that has a green belly? And the answer is, because the Braisa wants to distinguish between, you have a different type that lives in houses, and poaches on the walls, which is black. So that kind, the kind that's black then is not included in the the kind that lives in houses, then the implication would seem to be that kind of nests in crevices in the walls of houses, that kind would be that's not the one that we're talking about. That's not the one that's considered a subspecies of Ovid. So the machlokas, in other words, when we said white before, we don't have to mean that it's completely white. We just mean that most of its body is white. So in other words, basically there are three kinds of snudis. One kind which is black and lives in houses. One kind which is white all over. And one kind which is white but has a green or yellow belly. And so now we're saying the one that's black all over is in fact not a subspecies of Ovid. And the pashto said that would mean that it's kosher. Completely white one, and the white one with a yellow belly, that we have the two different versions of what Amema said and what Marzutra said, whether Rabbi Eliezer, which one the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer would be arguing with, and which one they say is definitely non-kosher, and which one they say is definitely kosher. That Ramban actually points out that, when you have a raven, an Urdiv is black. So if you have a bird that's white, then it means it's not a species of Urdiv. So now it might be the snunis that we said before. It might be lamino. It might be a related species to Urdiv, but it's not the Urdiv itself. But he was saying that actually the black one is Bechlal, not in the species of Urdiv, and the pastures that would mean that it's Moto. Next. Omar Ra, so here's another din talking about subspecies of birds. Now we know we learned earlier in our Masechta the other day that there were only two types of birds that are kosher for korbanos, Turdim and Bnei Yonah. Turdim are turtle doves, Bnei Yonah are regular doves, baby regular doves. So the Gemara says, Omar Ra, Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rachva says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. Now the interesting thing is they have in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda in Gemara usually means Rabbi Yehuda the Tana. The general rule is that any chacham who has the title Rebbe with a yud means that he got smicha in Eretz Yisrael. He got the smicha ishmi piyish that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu, which among other things can be given only in Eretz Yisrael. When you have somebody who bears the title Rab, then it means he didn't receive that smicha. Not Rav himself, actually Rav himself, Amora did receive smicha in Eretz Yisrael. He's called Rav because he was the Rav of the whole Jewish people in Babel, but to distinguish him from Rebbe, but among the later Amoraim, Rav Yehuda, Rav Chista, Rav Ashi, etc., all of them bear the title Rav because none of them got a smicha in Eretz Yisrael. So now we're saying Rachva says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. On the face of it, then that would have to be Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, who lives in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, Tosfos says, no, this is regular Rabbi Yehuda in Shas. Rachva would call him Rabbi Yehuda, meaning my Rebbe, Rachva, the Gemara mentions in other places in Shas, was very, very precise how he would speak and how he would tell over things that he learned from his Rebbeim. So he would call his Rebbe Rabbi Yehuda, even though he didn't have the smicha, ishmi piyish, meaning my Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda. Tosis brings another explanation that he would say Rabbi Yehuda, because he's not sure, in fact, whether the this that he's saying was, in fact, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda the Tanna or Rav Yehuda the Amora. But then Tosis says it doesn't really work with some other with some other Gemara that mentioned Rachva and his precision in learning and teaching Torah. Anyway, Rachva says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. Tosil, a type of bird that's called in Hebrew and Aramaic, Tosil, Tosil Mishum Turin, Vakoshum Mishum B'nai Yoyim. It's Tosil as Turin, because it's not a subspecies of turtle dove, Vakoshum Mishum B'nai Yoyim. However, it would be kosher as B'nai Yoyim. It's considered to be a subspecies of Yoyim, of dove, and therefore you could bring it as a dove, wherever you have to bring a dove as a korban, you could bring it, but only as we learned earlier in the Masechta, provided that it's young, before the point when it grows, as we learned before, there comes a point when it grows yellow feathers around its neck, and then it's tossel. So now the tossel, you should know, says Rachva, is considered a subspecies of Yonah for that purpose. On the other hand, Datsifi, then you have a different kind of bird called Datsifi, the Torin Shal Rachva, and also Torin of Rachva. Now here we don't mean Rachva the Amora, here we just mean Rachva or Rachava. It can mean a name of a place, Rachava can mean the town square or whatever. Those are the other way around. Ksher Mishum Torin, Uksul Mishum B'nei Yonah. Those would be kosher as Torin, but they're kosher as B'nei Yonah. So you can only bring them as korbanos when they're mature. So in other words, Rachva wants you to know, when we say doves or turtle doves, we don't mean Dafka, two narrow species of that name. You have a number of subspecies that go under the, so you have at least one other subspecies, the Tosil, that goes under the category of Yonah, and you have at least two other species, Datsifi and Turin Shorachva, that belong under the category of Turin. And any of those can be brought as Korbanos, provided that they're within the proper age bracket. But the Gemara says, must have Rav Daniel Baruch Tina. Rav Daniel Baruch Tina says, then I have a contradiction fact. A Mishnah tells us in Parah, and now when it comes to the Parah Adruma water, when the Parah Adruma water, once the water has been mixed with the ashes, you can't have anything else mixed into it. First of all, you can't have malacha done with the water. If it does, it passes it. Second of all, you also can't have anything mixed into it. So Mishnah says, Kala opus post from the mechapas. All birds, if they drink from mechapas, from Parah Adruma water, they're going to make it possible. With the exception of the dove, because it sucks up the water. Meaning, so Rashi explains like this. What would make the water possible is if malacha was done with it. Now, if the, now with other birds, they drink up the water, but they also, what do they do? They, Rashi describes, most birds, they get some water into their beak, and then they lift up their beak out of the water, and some water drips from their beak back into the water. So now Rashi explains that water, in effect, has had malacha done with it, and therefore that would make it possible, because any malacha that's done with the water makes it possible, with the exception of a dove, the patient might set this, because it doesn't drink up the water that way. It sucks up the water, and therefore no water falls from its mouth. That should be considered that malacha was done with it. So that's one explanation. Earlier in the Masechta, Rashi brings a different point. Once the bird pulls up some water with its beak, so it's not mayim chayim anymore. It's not natural spring water now already. It's been drawn through with the bird's beak, and then it falls back into the water in a different place in Shas, Rashi gives another point as well, because once it's in its mouth, then it can't be considered mechatas anymore. Now it falls in, it would just be considered ordinary water, and it would be possible. In fact, when Rashi is saying over here that malacha was done with it, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta, wonders what kind of malacha is there in drinking it. So different other points is because you have liquid from their mouth, saliva from their mouth that's mixed into it. But again, the dove, we're saying, might set us, it sucks the water, and therefore none of its saliva then would get into the water. So whatever the case, there are a few different explanations of what the problem is with other birds drinking versus the Yonah. The point is, says Rav Daniel Bar Ketina, you're telling me, Rachva, that there's not only the Yonah is kosher for a korban, you're telling me the tassel is also considered a subspecies of Yonah, the Im Issa. Now, if so, if the tassel is considered a Yonah, listening chutz mi Yonah v'tassel, then the Mishnah should have said, except for the Yonah and the tassel. So, in other words, it's got a name of its own. It's not known as, it's not commonly known as Yonah. It's commonly known as Tassel. So the Mishnah should be telling us that if a Tassel drinks from the water, then it's also five. And the answer is Omer Abzeda. So Abzeda says because there is a key difference. Zem moitze to make the Tassel, it's true, it sucks up the water, but then it expectorates some of the water back into it. So in other words, what you have is, it actually explains, other birds, b'chalal, don't suck up the water in the first place. They just scoop up some water in their lower beak. And that's going to create a problem, as we said before. The tassel is like the yona in that it sucks it. But the difference is that afterwards it regurgitates some of the water that it sucked up back into the water. So therefore, again, so now you have that, so now you have malocha was done with it, or because its saliva is mixed in, or whatever the different reasons. But then moitzit tzveinim meki, as opposed to the true dove, sucks up the water and doesn't regurgitate any back into the water, and therefore no malacha was done and nothing from its mouth is mixed in, etc. So that's the difference. So that's the difference. The tassel is in fact considered a yona, but nevertheless, and therefore you can bring it as a korban, but it does have that distinction as far as how it drinks water, and therefore it drinking from mechatas will tassel then. More on this topic. I'm going to be avoiding now, getting back to different kinds of birds. Kufshoni tzitzioni. It actually explains kufshoni is an Aramaic word for turtle, for these turtle doves that we've been talking about. Tzitzioni, it actually says, is they're named after the place that they come from. The Aruch gives a different explanation, that it's a bird that has a crest like on its head. It resembles a turtle. It resembles a turtle dove, but it has a crest of feathers on its head. And therefore it's called tzitzioni because the word tzitz means like a fringe. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda says, k'sherim l'gabim mizbeach, such birds are kosher to bring as a korban on the mizbeach, v'hein hein, turn and show rachava. This is when we said at the bottom of Omer Aleph that Rachva had said in his name that turn and show rachva are kosher. These are the, you want to know what are the turn and show rachva? These birds, these kufshoni tzitzioni. So the Moses Mesra, I have a contradiction now. A Braisa says, when it comes to, now we know one of the things that's used for different mitzvahs in the Torah, they have to use it to daub the blood of the Torah in Pesach and Mitzvah, they have to use Ezo. They have to use Ezo, a type of herb. In Mitzrayim, they used it for the blood to put the Korban part, the blood of the Korban Pesach on the doorposts. In later generations, it's one of the things thrown into the fire with the Par Aduma. It's one of the things used for the Tara of Mitzvah. There's a couple of different areas in Halacha where Ezov has to be used. Now, Braisa says, Ezov, when the Torah tells us you have to use Ezov for these purposes, Veloy Ezov Yoin, Yovan, so not Greek Ezov, Veloy Ezov Kochli, and not Blue Ezov, Veloy Ezov Roimi, and not Roman Ezov, Veloy Midbari, and not desert Ezov. So all these are types of Ezov, but they're not the actual kind that the Torah wants. You can't use any other Ezov that has a secondary name. The Torah says Ezov, and therefore it has to be specifically Ezov. So now, then, by the same token, the Torah says Torim, and the Torah says B'nai Yonah. Why would we say, in the case of these Kufshoni Tzitzioni, where again, Kufshoni, fine, is just an Aramaic translation of Torim, but they have a second name for them, Tzitzioni, after the name of the place they're from, or after the fringe on their heads, or whatever. And we said before, at the bottom of Amar Aleph, we call them Turin Shal Rechava. Well, why should they be kosher if they have a secondary name? The same way as Ezer, the same way, for example, as Greek Ezer is not kosher, the same way Turin of Rechava should not be kosher either. So what's the difference? There is, by the way, a cute vort on this from a Tzadik HaKoyin Milublin. He says a deeper understanding of this explanation that you can't use any of these kinds of Ezov. He says that the Ezov, so in particular when it comes to the Mitzvah, we put in the Ezov over there to represent that from now on he needs to be humble. Until now he was proud and tall like a cedar tree, and we use a piece of cedar wood in the ritual for him, so now he has to be more humble like an Ezov. So Tzadik HaKoyin points out a cute idea then, that all the different kinds of no good things that are over here all represent a flawed kind of humility that the person shouldn't have. He has to have the real kind. Ezev Yavon, Yavon is famous for their chokhmah, for their philosophy and all. So Ezev Yavon would mean he's not really Onav, but chokhmah tells him that this is, if he acts as an Onav, then he's going to get what he wants. So that's no good. Ezev Kufli, where it has a bluish color, would be, he says, that, you know, people consider humility to be an important midah, a nice, beautiful midah, like a blue color. So therefore, so I'm going to pretend to be one. Ezev Roini would be on the contrary. The Romans were famous for their gaiva, so that represents that a person who really is gaivadik, but he thinks to himself, you know what, the only one that I'm going to act as a high-class person for in front of is great people. In front of regular people, I don't care about them anyway, so I can act in front of them as humble. That's no good either. And Ezev Midbari, the desert Ezev, would represent a person who really is like a desert. He's empty of any good quality, and therefore he really is an Anav. So no, the true kind of Anav is the Ezev Stam, where he knows he has Milas and Midas Tovis and he has Torah, but he knows he recognizes everything is from Hashem, and therefore he doesn't become proud. So that's the true kind of Ezev that the Torah wants, and that's the true kind of humility that the Torah wants from the Metzora. Anyway, the point is, again, getting back to the Gemara, again, the question is that here by Ezev, we're saying if it has a secondary name, then it's possible, whereas by the Torah, we don't seem to be saying. Rabbi explains, whenever you have a species where its name was already changed before Matan Torah, you have some kind of species which already had a different name before Matan Torah, as in these various types of Ezev. Now, maybe they weren't called Ezev Roimi, the kind of city of Rome didn't necessarily exist yet at the time the Torah was given, fine, but the point is, in other words, it had some other secondary name, and then over time, later on, the name changed to Ezev Roimi. Now, the Peter Torah Olav, the Torah then is Maxid, and says you have to have plain Ezev, and not even once in all the places where the Torah mentions Ezev, does it say anything about another kind, then that means Yeshua Shem Levi Fossil. So now, if it has a secondary name, then it will be fossil because the Torah is clearly makbid on that of the various types, which already at the time of the giving of the Torah, 3,300 years ago, are already known as Ezev something, then they're fossil. Vahani, as opposed to these Kufshoni Tzitzioni, these Torah Shoracha, Boynishkan Shimon for the Matan Torah. Their name was not different before Matan Torah. They were just called Torah Plain. Later on, people decided to give them a sub name, Tzitzioni, after the fringe on their heads or after the place where they come from or whatever. But at the time of the giving of the Torah, they were just called Plain Torah. Rava Omar, Rava gives a different explanation. Hani Kufshoni Tzitzioni Basrai, Samakari Lahu. Because, yes, we call them Tzitzioni after the name of the place they come from, but in the place where they're native to, they just call them plain Kufshoni, which means turding. So it's only other places where they have a shame of eye, as opposed to the different kinds of Ezev that we said before. Those kind are called Ezev something, even in the place that they're native to. So in other words, the idea would be that for example, let's say you have the Ezev Yavan, the Greek Ezev, we would think that it means, you know, we call it Greek Ezev because it comes from Greece. In Greece, they probably just call it plain Ezev, but no, now Rava is saying that no, in fact, they call it Ezev Yavan, they call it Greek Ezev everywhere in the world, including even in Greece. So that's the difference. In other words, everywhere it's called Ezev, it's called Ezev Roimi. A different explanation. The Divrei Nechemia brings an explanation that when we say the problem is that it has a secondary name, means that it's a second species. So now Torah Tzitzioni, these Kufshoni Tzitzioni, the fact is in their place they call them plain Torah, demonstrating therefore that they're not really a separate species of Torah, as opposed to Ezev Roimi is really different enough that it can't be considered the same min, and therefore it's going to be possible, and you need plain Ezer. So that would be another way of understanding the difference. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ani karzi debei chilf. These karzi that grow among the weeds, that live among the thorns or the weeds. Rashi explains that karzi are a type of locusts. So a certain type of locusts that are mutter and a different kind that are also. Tosfos objects and says, wait a minute, we're still talking about birds over here. Locusts we're going to talk about later on in the Perek. That's Samach Dalam, Samach Hay. We'll talk about locusts. We're not there yet. So rather, Tosfos says, no, we are in fact talking about birds, but they're very tiny birds. So we'll explain it. So let's learn the piece, and then we'll explain how Rashi and Tosfos understand it respectively. So, Amr of Yehuda, Hani Karzi Debei Chilfi Sharu. The Karzi, again, according to Rashi, this is a type of locust that live among these thorns. Sharu are mutter to eat. They're one of the types of locusts that we're going to learn later on in the parak that the Torah says are mutter to eat. Or Debei Karvi, on the other hand, the ones that are found in the place of Karvi. So Rashi translates Karvi as cabbage. So this is the Karzi that live among cabbages. There are different other, the Oruch, has a different geusa, then it means that ones that live in piles of dirt. So then, Asiri, those are also, those are not among the locusts that are mutter. Amar Ravina, Makin and Alayim, Lashon Sheretz Ha'oif. And Ravina says, in fact, a person would get malchus for eating that second type because of Sheretz Ha'oif, because it's not just that there's a suffix whether they're also, Ravina says, you should know they're actually completely, definitely also, as not, they're not one of the species that are kosher, and therefore a person would get malchus from them, same way as he would get malchus for eating any other kind of insects that are also. Now that's a point of ration. Again, if one's a Tosfos, first of all, we're talking about birds over here, and second of all, what's the chiddush? Of course, if a person eats a non-kosher locust, he gets malchus for Sheretz Ha'oif. So rather, Tosfos says, no, what we're talking about here, these parasites are very tiny birds. They mostly swarm around on the ground. They don't fly very much. So maybe like we're talking about like hummingbirds or something. So the point is that that because they don't fly, I guess it's not hummingbirds because hummingbirds do fly, so it'd be some kind of little bird-like creatures, which they're still considered Sheretz Ha'oif. Don't think that they're called oif, that they're called birds, and therefore as long as they have enough of the Simone Tara, then they're good. No, Rabbi Yehuda wants you to know that because these birds don't fly, because these creatures don't fly, therefore they're not considered birds. Which I guess would mean, it would come out maybe according to that explanation of Tosfos, it would come out that other kinds of flightless birds, ostriches are actually listed in the Torah, but ostriches do fly sometimes, but whatever, various kinds of flightless birds, the dodo, which is now extinct, and various others, maybe in fact Halacha wouldn't consider them birds precisely because they don't fly. Next. So now the Gemara is going to go through some kinds of birds which were familiar in those times and which sometimes have very similar names and you could get confused between them. Many of them we don't really know what their identity is nowadays. We can kind of guess, but anyway. So as far as, by the way, the point that Tosfos objects to Rashi, that why are we mentioning locusts over here when we're in the middle of birds? So one explanation is that Rashi would answer, now look, the Gemara is bringing together a bunch of Rabbi Yehuda's dinim about different kinds of creatures that you're allowed and not allowed to eat. So therefore it's stuck in one about locusts, even though yes, the context is we're talking about birds. So the Gemara continues, well, Rabbi Yehuda, Srada Sarda Shari. There are two birds that have very similar names. One called Sarda and one called Barda. The Sarda, says Rabbi Yehuda, is mutter to eat. The Barda is not. The Simonach, now you're Simon, how are you going to make sure not to confuse them? Remember the expression Barmine, outside of it, so like go away from here. So Barda has the word Bar in it, which means outside, so that helps us remember it has to stay outside of us. We're not allowed to go away from us. Now, what about Marda? Then there's another kind. So you have Sarda, you have Barda, and then you have another kind called Marda. Sveka, that one is a suffix, whether it's a kosher bird or not, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain in a second. Amar Ravasi says, actually, Shmoina Sveka, saying there are actually eight types of birds that are a suffix. Chuva, Chuga, Suga, V'chanuga, Tushlami, Umarda, Kuchilna, Ubaunatcha. So eight kinds of birds. Again, we can't really identify what any of them are. Some of them borrowed their names for birds in modern Hebrew. For example, in modern Hebrew, chuva or chova, whatever, is a type of bird called in English a bustard. But is that actually the one that the Gemara means over here? Maybe not. Tushlami, it seems from some places, is maybe some type of parrot. Anyway, whatever the case, we can't really identify them. So the Gemara says, "Mais chikai." What exactly is mesabit? So like a soifus to hold him, kukuban and nikla. With kosher birds, we said one of the four simonim is that the gizzard can be peeled. The gizzard has an inner layer that can be peeled off the muscular layer. Tmeyan ain't kukuban and nikla. With non-kosher birds, the gizzard cannot be peeled off. Now, we learned before in the Sugya. So Rashi explains it means they have the three other clear simonim. They just don't have this one. If they have these, as the Gemara is going to say, it's not so clear whether the gizzard is considered peelable. So actually, let's go through in the next line. So Tumein and Kukuban Nikla. Bahani Kukuban Nikla for Sakinam. These ones, you can peel the Kukuban, but only with a knife, not by hand. So Rashi explains, the point is like this. These birds have the other three simonim tau. If you consider that their gizzard is able to be peeled, then it means they have all four. Well, then they're definitely kosher, because we established before that any bird that has all four simonim is definitely kosher. The question is that so, or maybe not? Maybe, in fact, that it's considered if not peelable, because then it can't be peeled by hand, and therefore it means it only has three. And then it might be one of the other Talmud birds, which have three simonim, So that's the point of Rashi. Tosfos points out then that it means that when we say we learned before that most of the birds have three simonei tara, that would mean necessarily that they're not dirtus and they have a crop and they have an etz v'yisera. Because otherwise, if you have kukavon and nifluf, then it wouldn't fit with all Gemara over here. And in fact, Tosfos goes on and says that the b'chlal, if you have a bird that kukavon et niklof, where you can in fact peel the gizzard by hand, and you have at least one other simen with them, then it should be good. We said before, oif above a simen echad tohar, so it means the one simen is kukavon et niklof. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Chananel, kabbalah b'yadenu ma'avesteinu. We have a kabbalah from our ancestors that the one simen that's good enough by itself, as long as not dirtus, is at Kukavon and Niklaf, we mentioned before, the Rambam says something similar. Okay. In any case, so now the question is, with these eight, you can't peel it off by hand, only with a knife. So the question is, and again, according to Rashi, they do have all the other Simone Tara. So now the question is whether these are considered Kukavon and Niklaf, and therefore they have all four Simonim, and therefore they're good. So that's the nature. So in short, that's the nature of the suffix. So the Gemara says, why? Why? There was a case of a goose that was in the house of Mar Shmuel. They couldn't peel its kukavon. So he put it in the sun, and it got softened by the sun's heat. Iklif, then it was able to be peeled. So you see that even now, a goose is unquestionably a kosher animal, it is unquestionably a kosher bird, and nevertheless we see that here the lining of the kukavon was very tightly attached. Just because you have to put it in the sun doesn't mean anything. So why over here with these eight birds, just because you have to use a knife to peel off the kukavon, what's the problem? And the answer is fine, but Hossam peeled off the iklif the other. Fine, but there, at least when it's softened in the sun, you could in fact peel it off by hand. But with these eight, Afal Gabdi Rafi, even if you soften them, even if you put them in the sun, and they heat up, but Niklaf Ela B'Sakina, nevertheless, you still need a knife to peel them, and maybe therefore that's reason enough to consider them non-kosher birds. Okay. Of these eight, the Gemara says, Amar Abaya, kind of Gurla de Agma, the chicken of the swamp, so some kind of bird, that's some kind of bird similar to a chicken that regularly lives in swamps. So you should know this is one of the eight sfeikas. This is the bird that we call, that we said above, is called Maudu before. Actually, we said Maudu with an aleph, but it's the same thing. Yeah. So now you can identify. Abaya says you can identify one of the eight that Abasi listed with a bird that bears a different name in our place. So in this connection, actually, the Amar Papa, kind of Gurla de Agma Asira, it is true that the rooster of the meadow, of the swamp, is Asir, kind of Gurla de Agma Shaya, but the hen of the swamp is Mutter. So now, Tosfos points out, it doesn't mean these are not two different species, these are not the male and female of the same species, because how would you have anything that comes out of a kosher species is itself kosher. So when the female lays eggs and then chicks are born from them, then those are going to be kosher. How could you possibly have that the males would be non-kosher and the females would be kosher? Rather, Tosfos says no. It just means that these are two different species. It happens that one species bears a male name and the other bears a female name, but it's not that one of them, it's not that the males versus the females, it's two different species where it happens that one of them bears a female name and the other one bears a male name. So the one that bears the female name, we're saying is Mutter, and the one that bears the male name is Osir, but not that they're actually, not that they're different genders. Tosfos mentions this in Nida as well, and argues the point that maybe you wouldn't even say kol ha'yotzim and ha'tahor tahor because after all the egg has to completely spoil before the chick comes out of it. Nevertheless, Tosfos over there in Nida brings up the possibility maybe in fact we are talking about the males and females of the same species, but then Tosfos gives another answer over there, and again this is the only answer that they give over here, that it's actually two different species and they just happen to bear gendered names. Anyway, the simonach, so the prophet says, here's a simon for you to remember which is which. Remember, like we have by the Torah tells that an Amorini and a Moavi are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. What we learn, Amorini v'loy Amorinis. We learn that an Amorini, a man, alone from Ammon, who becomes a ger, is never allowed to intermarry freely into the Jewish people. He can only marry a Gioris or Mamzeris or what have you. As opposed to an Ammonis, a woman from Ammon, is mutter right away. And the same thing with Moir. So that helps you remember an example where male is also and a female is mutter. So the same way over here, the one that bears the male name is going to be also, the one that bears the female name is going to be mutter. We'll get according to one possible answer in choices, even within the same subspecies itself, where the males might be also and the females might be mutter. Okay. The Gemara continues, Dorosh Marema. Marema gave a Dorosha in this connection. Trying to go to the Agma Asira. The hen of the swamp is also. Now we just said before it's mutter. The problem is because you are the dirst of the ocho, they saw one time that this bird is actually dirtus and eats behind Girusa, and then now they know to identify it as the Girusa, which is known to be a non kosher species of bird. Rashi brings from later in the Masechta that says that the Gemara gives a bunch of examples over there where Hashem asked us something, but Hashem gave us something similar to it, which is mutter. One example is we're not allowed to eat Girusa, but we have something else. We have the tongue of a certain kind of fish that tastes exactly like it. So we see that Girusa is a bird that's non-kosher. So Tosfos explains, originally they thought it wasn't Dervis, and therefore, so because it wasn't Dervis, then they figured that's good enough. They, again, as we said before, you don't have to worry about that it's Peres or Osnia, because those are not found in civilized areas, or at least they knew that it's not Peres and Osnia. But now they found that it's Dirtus, so now when it's Dirtus and they know it's definitely not kosher, so now they knew they couldn't eat it. An interesting point that comes up in that connection is until now, it seems that people were eating it, possibly including the Chachamim. So an interesting question that's brought up in that connection is, earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara says that Hashem does not allow a takkola through tzaddikim. Hashem does not allow that tzaddikim will make a mistake in Torah, and in particular, Tosfos says that they won't end up eating something that's non-kosher. So on the face of it, until now, they thought that this bird was kosher, and therefore they were eating it. For Pashkus, that would mean that the Chachamim were eating it as well. So what is that? In fact, we said before, a Papa said flat out, that's allowed. So weren't Tzaddikim eating it until they found that it was Dirtus? So there's a couple of interesting answers on this. The Taz brings an explanation that the Tzaddikim themselves wouldn't eat it. Who says Rapapa or any of the other Chachamim ate it? It means they said that's mutter, other people ate it. So therefore, now it was discovered that it's Dirtus, and now people have to stop eating it. But the Chachamim not necessarily ever ate it in the first place, says the Taz. On the other hand, the Truvas Arosh seems to imply that they in fact did eat it. So Sifas Fulham said, look, it really is a kosher bird. They saw one of them that was Dirtus. So therefore we don't know, there might be others as well, and therefore we have to ask her at Misafik. But it's not really. In reality, the original understanding was correct. It really is generally not Dirtus, and therefore it's not a non-kosher bird. And the fact that you found one exception is not a proof to the contrary. So the Chachamim passed it from then on to be on the safe side, but not that it is inherently also. So a couple of different explanations of how that could be. The Gemara continues. Here's other examples of birds that might be easily confused. Amarav, Shabur Andrafta Shori. A bird called Shabur Andrafta is mutter to eat. Piruz Andrafta also. On the other hand, a different kind of bird called Piruz Andrafta is also. The Simonov and your Simon, to not confuse them, Piruz Rashia. Remember, Piruz the wicked. Somebody who was known to be a fellow named Piruz, who was known to be wicked. Now, there was, in fact, about 200 years after Rav's time, there was a Persian emperor named Piruz, who was indeed a tremendous Russia. And there were, in his times, he started persecutions against the Jews of Babel. Maybe the Gemara is referring to him over here, in which case the Simon wouldn't be from Rav himself. Rav lived 200 years earlier. Then we would have to say that the Simon was added by the editors of the Gemara at the end of the this Piruz lived in the time of the last generation of Amorim. Or it could mean that there was a different fellow in Rav's times also bearing the name Piruz, who was also known to be a Russian. Or if Hashalim brings that maybe actually Shabur and Piruz are different names of places. So it would mean that Andrafta that comes from the place called Shabur is Mutter. And the Andraflin comes from a place called Podpirus, would be otter, and the simon would be to remember the word pirus wouldn't necessarily mean the name of a Russia. He says maybe it actually means like you would say, in other words, think of a posuk that mentions prozav as meaning rishoyim, the captive of matam, rosh prozav, and therefore it hints at this idea that pirus is associated with the idea of rishoyim. It's an interesting idea, by the way, that the Sansino English Gemara brings an interesting idea from somebody that the word andrafta might be related to some Greek words that means speaks like a person, andropata, or some androfata, or something like that. And in that case, maybe Shabar andrafta and Peter's andrafta are types of parents, which mimic human speech. So maybe, interesting possibility. Some other examples. Amar Avuna, Bunia Shori, there's a type of word called Bunia, which is mutter to be. Parva osir, but there's a different kind, similar to it, called parva, which is osir. The simonach, and you simon to remember which is which. Parva am gusham. Remember parva, the magician. The Gemara tells us in Yuma that there was a chamber in the Beis Mikdash called Lishkas Beis HaParva, and that was named after a magician. There's a couple of different explanations why the chamber was named for him. One is that he built it. And in fact, there are explanations that it means he did tshuva, and then he built it, or it can mean like he built it with an engineering system for plumbing it was such a piece of wizardry that people thought he was a magician for building it. And then you have a whole different explanation that Rambam and a number of Rishonim bring, that this parva wanted to peek in on the Kohen Gadol's avodah on Yom Kippur, so he started digging a tunnel under the Beis Mikdash, and then they caught him and they executed him, and the spot where they executed him was called later on they built a chamber there and called it Lishkas Beis HaParva. In any case, this parva was an ambusher of a Persian priest and a magician, which is something completely osir to us, so that helps you remember that the bird called parva that has a similar name to him is osir. Another example, Amar Papa, Mardu Zogid V'Ochel Shori, a type of bird called Mardu Zogid V'Ochel, it's a three-word name for this bird, Shori, that kind of bird is mutter. We said before the Mardu is a suffix, but Amar Papa says that Mardu Zogid V'Ochel is not that kind. It's a different kind, that kind is mutter. Sogid V'Ochel, but on the other hand, the Mardu, that's called Sogid V'Ochel, where Sogid literally means that he bows down and eats osir. Then it's osir. But Pashtus, we can say that Zogid V'Ochel means the Mardu that stands upright to eat, as opposed to Sogid V'Ochel means the Mardu that bends down, that bows down to eat. Whatever the case, it's osir. The Simona, the Simon, to remember which is which. Like the Pashtus says, Lois Tishtak V'la Kelacha. Don't bow to another god. So that helps you remember that the bird that has sogid bowing in its name is os. Amar Shmuel, here's another example. Shmuel says, Shasya Chamra Asira, the bird called in Aramaic, Shasya Chamra, the wine drinker, is os. The simonach and your simon is, think of the expression, Suryayim Psulam Avoidim. People who have drunk, wine are possible to do the avoidah. So that helps you remember that a bird that's called the wine drinker is also possible. By the way, Rashi points out that given that we have, before we said about the time of roads to Agma, we said that they found that it was dirt, and so therefore they asked it. So Rashi points out, look, you know, you never know. Any bird that's brought before us where we have never seen it before, it might end up being that it's dirtus, just like this time of roads to Agma, which they thought was kosher, and then it turns out that it's dirtus. The result is, therefore, what we said before, that you can only eat kosher of birds, that you can only eat birds only if you have a masoda. So in practice, we have the few birds that are known to be kosher: chickens, geese, ducks, certain kinds of pigeons and pheasants, and then you have a few different birds that different communities have masodas on them. But whether such masodas are transferable from one community to another is a whole different question. But anyway, the point is that even though, as the Gemara is telling us over here, there are in principle only about a couple of dozen species of birds that are also, in practice, we can eat them only with masodas. And again, of course, there is the point that all the birds that the Gemara is mentioning over here are also, we can't really identify them definitively. For Amar Shmuel says in this connection, another example, Mazga Chamra Asira. There's a type of bird called Mazga Chamra, which literally means the wine mixer. So that would be Osir to eat. Bas Mazga Chamra Shari. But then there's another kind of bird called Bas Mazga Chamra. Now, we don't mean this is not the daughter, this is not the child of the Mazga Chamra. It just means there's a different kind of bird that's known in Aramaic as Bas Mazga Chamra. Sharia, that kind is mutter. The Simonach, and a way to remember that, is the expression, Yofa Karech Ben, Mikarech Ha'av, the son's power is greater than the father. It comes up in the Sefer Shavuos and Dine Mominus. You have certain, a case over there, when a person himself would have to swear in order to collect on a certain kind of claim. But if his son is trying to collect it, then he doesn't need to swear. So you have an example. The son's power is greater than the father. So I'm going to use that expression in a few places. Actually, we had it earlier in our parak as well, as far as the different part, the different areas of fact on the summit where we had over there. We also had over there something about the one called the father, and one where we had barchimsa versus chimsa, where we said one kind is effective at plugging a hole, and the other one not. And again, yafa kaya chaben mikaya chav. So the same way we hear the bas mazga chamra, which literally means the child of the mazga chamra, is greater and is kosher as opposed to the mazga chamra itself is not. Another example of this kind of thing, of birds that can easily be mixed up. Amar Yehuda shakitna. As far as the bird called Shakitna, the Sansino Gemara brings up a possibility that it may be some kind, that it may be like flamingos or something. Anyway, Arichi Shaki the Sumki, the ones that have long legs and that are red, Shalia, those are Mutati, the Simonach, and you simon for that, Murzima, is remember that they're similar to a Murzima, which is a bird that was known to be Tahar, which also has long legs and a red body. So now the long-legged red Shakitna would be similar to that. Utsi, on the other hand, the short ones, the sunki, which have red bodies, asiri, those would be also the simona. And your simon is, remember, that koinim, nanas posel, a short koin, a koin is shorter than normal, is posel to do the avodah. So that helps you remember that the short-legged bird is obviously not all short-legged birds, but within this species of shakitna, then the ones that have short legs are posel. Another one, Arichi Shaki Viruki. What about the ones that have long legs and green or yellow bodies? Those also are city, those are also awesome. The Simonach and the Simon for you is remember, earlier in the parak we said Yerukin Psulin. We had the example where a bird fell into a fire and its internal organs got scorched by the heat. We said if there were internal organs such as the liver and the heart and whatever that are normally supposed to be red and now they turn green or yellow, then the bird's shaker. So that helps you remember that similarly here, green or yellow is a simon for this particular kind of non-kosher business. So in other words, of these three types, the only one that would be kosher then is the one that has long legs and a red body. Again, what kind of bird are we talking about? Are we talking about a flamingo? Or are we talking about some other kind of bird? We don't know, which is why we can eat birds only with a mesurvis.